Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. When children love learning, they can tackle any challenge life throws at them. Sylvan's Insight Assessment can help you determine if your child is ready for what's ahead. It can also identify gaps in learning and point out areas that could be of concern for your child so they can tackle what's to come. And right now, it's the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's sylvan29.com.
You're listening to The 30 Podcast. Here's your host, Jazz King.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to a new episode of The 30, the first one of 2023. Before we jump into things on the Sixers, don't forget, subscribe to the Liberty Ballers Podcast Network. You can catch us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, you name it, we are there. And of course, check out our talented team of writers at libertyballers.com. One of the people who is behind the magic you see on the site, Mr. Jackson Frank. Jackson, I was going to say Happy New Year, but at which point do we reach the day that you can't say it anymore? Do you think like January 4th, it's still okay for me to say this?
My general rule of thumb has been with this, like, if I see anyone for the first time in January of the new year, I feel like it's okay. But it definitely gets a little weird past, like, the first week and a half. I think the 4th is certainly an appropriate time.
Yeah, I feel like it depends on how close you are to a person. Like, if I'm seeing, like, a friend, if I'm seeing, like, a coworker or something, we're, like, 2 weeks in, it's like, oh, did you have a good new year? Have a good new year. But I think that once you get to like maybe I feel like today is the cutoff, right? I saw a couple things yesterday being like the 3rd is the cutoff, but I feel like January 4th is the cutoff for saying Happy New Year. Is anybody listening to this podcast likely going to be after the 4th? Don't say it anymore. Okay. That's what we're going to go with. Let's jump into some Sixers talk. They're getting healthy. Tyrese Maxey back in the lineup. Of course, they're taking on a Pacers team. We're recording this on Wednesday afternoon. They're taking on a Pacers team that has really surpassed expectations at 21-17, 1-4 in a row, still hanging on to the 6th and final guaranteed playoff spot in the Eastern Conference. Sean and Dave will be back with the Talking About show after that. But Jackson and I are going to be taking a look at the bigger picture stuff. So, Jackson, we're looking at this team. We're approaching the midway point. They're 22-14, played really well, obviously getting their guys back, as I mentioned, with Maxey and getting healthy. This team has won 10 of its last 12. When you're looking at now coming up in this stretch and this next run here, what are you looking for from the Sixers for the next 10 or so games, let's say?
Yeah, I think it's a matter of kind of figuring out the optimal lineups, figuring out what style they should be playing with everyone healthy. How much is Tobias involved? You know, how much is Maxey involved? You know, are these three guard lineups successful? And not just a three guard lineup as a concept, but is what sort of mixing and matching among the four guards in the rotation work best, right? So figuring that out. I think, you know, I'm pessimistic it happens, but I think with everyone healthy, you have at least the depth to reduce some of James Harden's minutes, maybe Joel a minute or two as well. So, you know, I don't think in Monday's game against the Pelicans, we saw much of any all bench lineups. We saw basically Harden and Embiid on the floor for almost every minute. And you saw Montrezl Harrell have a better game, which is not a coincidence when you don't make Jake Milton as his lead guard. So just stuff like that, preparing for the next second half of the year. And obviously this team has deep playoff runs. You know, the big goal is their title, at least NBA Finals appearance or an Eastern Conference Finals appearance. But yeah, just kind of figuring everything out with your guys' health. You've been playing well and whatnot. So that's a big thing to me. It's just answering lineup questions, who works well together, what style do we want to play, what are we good at, where do we still have some limitations. So navigating all of that, you know, especially ahead of the deadline, which is your last kind of chance to really invigorate this roster, before the stretch run of things.
Jackson, you're looking at this, you mentioned Harden, right? Like, he's leading the league in minutes, 38.1. Only played in 21 games so far this season, but obviously not ideal for a 33-year-old. When you're looking at, okay, they're getting Maxey back, obviously that's going to alleviate some of the pressure on Harden. He doesn't have to be out there as kind of the primary creator, although, you know, De'Anthony Melton, we saw Shake Milton have a nice little run there for a little bit, but that job without the team being fully healthy falls on Harden. But one thing I wanted to ask you about with Harden as well, you're looking at his shooting totals, right? Like field goal percentage-wise, hasn't been great, 43.7% for the season. Again, from the 3-point line, not doing really well above league average at 37.2. But when you look at why he's struggling a little bit from inside the arc, what changes do you think he needs to make in order to be a little bit more efficient with his shooting, especially when it comes to, like I said, inside the 3-point line?
Yeah, I think at this point, I don't have a great solution for him. He's just a diminished athlete at this point. Doesn't trust his finishing as much. You know, in his prime, he was a very good finisher, and part of it was he had really, really good kind of side-to-side fluidity. His Euro step was great. His ability to kind of fit in tight windows and still explode, you know, because he was a big kind of big-time dunker, you know, especially in that six-man role. Guy got downhill a lot. He kind of evolved his game over the years, but I don't think he has that anymore. So there's not a great solution. I think he's just kind of going to go a little bit as a scorer as his 3-point shot goes. And that's been the case the last couple of years. His free throw rate's way down this year compared to where it was, you know, last year with the Sixers. He was at his free throw rate was 0.650. This year it's 0.440. I think he's been better the last few games to get to the line. I don't know if he's necessarily done anything a lot better, maybe a little more aggression downhill. But he is kind of sometimes at the whim of the officials, you know, which is kind of just the nature of his game to an extent. But yeah, inside the arc, I don't have a great solution. I think he's been a little more aggressive trying to get his own shot in transition too. We've seen him kind of barrel the rim in single coverage against a backpedaling defender on the break. So I think that maybe the big thing is maybe just try and get out and run a little more. He's obviously pretty good at those hit-ahead passes, those cross-court passes to guys like Maxey and Melton and Shake. But as an individual scorer, you haven't seen him be super aggressive in transition, but you've seen a little more the last few games. So that'd be the big thing, is just trying to take advantage, you know, of those open court opportunities you can versus the congested lane. So, yeah, I think it's just kind of a matter of that. But, yeah, on the year, he's been quite good, playing really good ball. So, you know, you're just going to have to acknowledge that he's more of a top 15, top 20 guy when he's out there rather than the perennial MVP candidate he kind of was, you know, dating back to before that hamstring injury, his first, you know, year in Brooklyn.
Yeah, and you mentioned, Jackson, there that the three guard lineups, right? And we saw Doc kind of tinker with that, and obviously getting Maxey back into the fold will make things easier on that front. And so, you know, we saw times that we saw Maxey, Harden, De'Anthony Melton on the court together. We saw him try different stuff with, you know, Matisse Thybulle, but he's trying different things. So thank God, right, Jackson? I mean, come on, after all the complaints we've had about Doc Rivers, at least he's trying something different. When you look at the effectiveness of these three guard lineups, and Dave really wrote about this on Liberty Baller, so if you do get a chance, do check that out. Just mention the fact that how the Sixers have struggled in terms of pushing the pace. They did say they wanted to try and get out and get some easier buckets, and maybe they'll be able to do that with a three guard rotation. When you look at that, do you think that they'll be effective with the combination of players that they have, or is there something different you think you're looking for from the lineups? And so far, we'll jump into this a little bit deeper, but what are your thoughts on the job Doc has done thus far this season? Obviously, he's been a lightning rod in Philly, been the brunt of many jokes over the last couple of years, blowing the 3-1 leads in the playoffs. Got a little bit testy last year against Toronto when the Raptors had won a couple in a row. So looking at that, like where do you think they're at with the combinations, with the guards, and what are your thoughts so far on Doc Rivers' performance as the head coach this season?
Yeah, I think it's going to take some time. You know, we've only had 2 games with Maxey back. It's going to take some time to kind of really solidify my thoughts on that. But I'm curious to see how they hold defensively. I think it's something that, you know, Melton can guard up, but, you know, the trio of Harden, Maxey, and Shake is not a particularly stout defensive trio. I think Harden's actually been pretty impressive defensively, you know, for his standards, been pretty solid, especially with his hands, getting things in the pass lane, swiping the ball off of guys, getting steals, especially since he came back. You know, Maxey, I think, struggles with, you know, like executing switches promptly, and he's just small. Shake, I don't think, is very good navigating screens, so you're at a tough spot there. But offensively, I think you have a lot of potency. I think, like, if you're going to do these three-guard lineups, you want at least one of Harden and Embiid out there at all times, which is not necessarily, like, rocket science. I think that's obviously what you want regardless of, you know, how many guards you're playing. But I do like the offensive potential of these lineups. You have 4 really talented and kind of different style of guards. You have, you know, the lead ball handler in Harden, who's, you know, probably still the best scorer of the bunch. You have a guy like Melton, who's really, really good at pushing in transition, making some connective passes, really good spot up shooter. But Stroh's going to score inside the arc. You have Maxi, who's, you know, a dynamo off the catch and really good transition. And then you have Sheik, who's really kind of blending a little bit of all that. He's gotten better as a catch and shoot player this year, really good attacking off the catch, can make some impressive interior passes, wraparound passes. So I like the offensive potential of this group, and I'm curious to kind of see how they manage it, because guard depth is kind of the positional strength of this roster. You know, the wings, you know, aren't great behind Tobias. The center depth is kind of up and down and kind of match independent behind Joel. So I think you kind of got to lean into it as much as you can and kind of figure out what combinations work well, where do we maybe not go as heavy into, you know, these 3-year lineups. And if we have to, where, like, if we're playing against a team that has a couple of really talented wings, kind of how can we find an advantage there, you know, with our guards, maybe guys being a little more mobile and stuff like that. So I don't have really definitive thoughts yet, but those are some of the things I'm looking for as they continue to play him and as Maxi continues to play and reintegrate himself into the lineup.
Yeah, that I think that's going to be the interesting thing to look out for over the next couple of weeks. Obviously, the NBA season, a total grind, a marathon at 82 games, but giving us something to look out for. I think you do too. I'm not saying that anybody wouldn't, but it's like we're just expecting to see Maxi getting back, rounding into form after missing basically a couple of months there with that injury. So that's something to keep an eye on. And like you mentioned, how Doc does run these rotations. He's got his full slate of players now. There's no excuses with injuries. There's no excuses with you know, guys out of the lineup. So it's time to really hopefully get on a run here, because you look at this Sixer schedule. As I mentioned, we are recording this on a Wednesday. They're taking on the Pacers tonight, and then you got the Bulls, who are struggling on Friday. You got back to back against the Pistons, OKC, Utah, an awful Lakers team, and you're on that West Coast swing. So I mean, again, some very winnable games here that are going to allow the Sixers, hopefully, if they play at their best, to get some more wins, had that record. They're at 22-14, as I mentioned before, only three games out of the top spot behind Boston. Obviously, you got Brooklyn, the hottest team in the league, winning 12 in a row at number two. And then you got Milwaukee, Cleveland Cavaliers at four. So this is going to be a good time for the Sixers to try and take advantage and try and get themselves into at least maybe the top two or three spots with that easy schedule. Jackson, I want to jump into a couple more things, talk a little bit about Joel Embiid, talk a little bit about the offense, the defense, what your thoughts are there. We'll do that after a short break. All right, we're back. Jackson, wanted to jump into an Embiid talk. I mean, he's just been friggin' amazing. I love watching him play. I love watching the way he has evolved his game from being this, you know, predominantly down low guy to being able to beat you from the high post, being able to beat you from the 3-point line. He does it all. Won Eastern Conference Player of the Month for December, 35.4 points, 9.9 rebounds. You look at him overall, he's second in the league in scoring behind Luka Doncic, going to very much be right back in the NBA MVP award conversation come time for April. When you look at Joel, is there any, because I mean, you do such a good job like breaking down the little intricacies of the game, Jackson. When you have seen Embiid this season, is there anything you think he's added on compared to, I mean, obviously been super dominant the last two, but, or maybe he's tweaked a little bit in the offseason coming into this one?
I think something that we've seen a little more, especially since Harden came back, and we saw a lot of this last year, is he's become a really good off-ball scorer, not just in the sense that you can run pick and rolls with him. We've seen how good he is at that. I think it's funny to think about now that there are worries about kind of, could he play next to a primary ball hand? Like, would he be a good, you know, pick and roll scorer? Now he's, you know, last I checked, I think he was one of the most like high volume and efficient pick and roll finishers in the NBA. But he's like, I think Doc called it that slot cut, which is kind of that area between the wing and the top of the key. Had that awesome play against the Hornets when he dropped, was it 53 or 50? I can't remember exactly what he had a few weeks ago. I think he did it more recently too in a game. So that's kind of the biggest thing I would say. But just also the comfort he has from that free throw line area. It's impressive to think about the fact that, you know, when he came to the league and, you know, his first couple of years when he became, you know, an all NBA player, was he loved that left block, right? And he still loves that left block. But nowadays with Harden back, if you were able to track, and maybe there's some second spectrum data that, you know, I don't have access to, but if you kind of track where he's most often, you know, operating offensively, kind of with a heat map, it would be that free throw line area. So to be able to shift kind of your go-to area and get even better, whereas you were still, you know, a borderline, you were still an MVP candidate 2 years ago from that left block. Like really impressive to kind of evolve there. We're just so good. The pull-up game is, you know, as good as it's ever been, I think. So just kind of more an expansion of what we saw last year, both before and after Harden's arrival. and just kind of fine tuning that, I think, especially, you know, when we see some passing and still as well, you know, you saw how well he passed the ball when Harden was out against the Thunder. He didn't shoot the ball well, but, you know, still had 10 assists, a little sloppy with a lot of turnovers. But, you know, I think, you know, he didn't, and I don't know if this could be projecting, but I don't think he was particularly worried about the Thunder coming back. And, you know, when you get out to a 30-point lead in the first half, you know, it's not a big deal. So those are the big thing. It just felt like more kind of a expanded upon what we saw last year, and kind of the full proliferation of his game that makes him such a devastating offensive talent at this point in his career.
Yeah, and we've seen him, Jackson, and James Harden be really, really effective in the pick and roll. And obviously, it's an adjustment for Embiid too, right? When you're coming in a couple of years ago, obviously Maxey was a rookie. You know, you're playing with him. You're not expecting too much from him. Then year two, you're missing Ben Simmons. Embiid has to tweak his game and adjust to having the fact that, okay, I don't have Ben here. We got this guy who's emerging in Maxey, and then you make this trade for Harden. You know what I mean? Like, there's so many moving parts around him, but he still, you know, hasn't faltered at all. When you look at your personal ballot, right? Like, where do you have him amongst the NBA? Again, very early in the season, but do you think this is the season he finally breaks out to win the MVP?
It's tough just because, like, he's going to be working uphill the entire year because of those eight games he missed across the first 16 or 20 games of the season. I would have him top five right now. I think the top six, you know, especially with kind of Steph, unfortunately, having that shoulder, he's going to, you know, keep him out for at least a couple more weeks. Like, I think this top six in some form is, you know, KD, Jokic, Luka, Giannis, Tatum, and Embiid. You know, I think, you know, for me, my top three would kind of be some, I think right now it's like a KD, Luka, Jokic, and then a small kind of cutoff tier with Tatum, Embiid, and Giannis, and the next one. I don't necessarily know if I have in order. I think KD right now would be my top pick. He's just been incredible on both ends and playing a ton of minutes and all that. But I don't think by any means it's impossible for Embiid to get up there. You know, he's played 16 straight games, playing a ton of minutes, playing really well. I think he's coming off of one of his best defensive games of the year too. I thought he was overall really, really good on defense against the Pelicans in conjunction with, you know, the 42 points on, I think, 24 shots. So, you know, one of his, you know, he's had some really good games here, but I think that might've been one of his best all around games, which is a testament to both the way he played and a testament to how well he's played all season. So, he'd be kind of in my top five or six right now, but he's just working from a bit of a deficit in terms of games and minutes played, because I think those other guys have been, you know, roughly as good as him, you know, on a per game basis. So, but I think he can get there. I don't necessarily know if he will, but I wouldn't be surprised, you know, if he does win the MVP or if he's a finalist again this year for the third straight season. But for me, just a little bit outside of that highest tier right now, but certainly kind of see the upward mobility. It's by no means an indictment of how he's played when he's on the floor. It's just the reality that, you know, he's missed, you know, eight games, and, you know, guys like, you know, Luka, I think, has missed one or two. Jokic just missed two or three. Tatum, one or two. So, you know, just tough to kind of really, you know, make up that minutes gap through only, you know, 45% of the year.
Well, there you have it, Sixers fans. Jackson Frank saying Joel Embiid not an MVP candidate. Not, we're going to break this down. No, I'm just messing with you. No, I agree with you. I think he's got obviously missing some time and looking around the league. We mentioned, you know, Luka's been fantastic. Obviously, Giannis, always going to be a part of that conversation. Nikola Jokic, Kevin Durant having a great season too. So again, lots of time left yet. I mean, I do think if he continues what he's doing, and the Sixers are obviously, you know, can't just be like a six seed going in, I think that makes it difficult to get the votes to become MVP, because usually it goes to guys who are on teams who are, you know, like one of the top two, three, four, five teams in the league. Obviously with Jokic, we saw something different. That was because that team was so deft of talent without Michael Porter Jr. and Jamal Murray. So again, I do have a feeling though, if the Sixers are able to finish as like a top two seed in the East and Embiid's putting up these numbers, I feel like voters might just feel like they have to give it to him at this point. You know what I mean? Because you can't keep denying the fact that what the Sixers would be with or without this guy, and that's including Harden, Maxey in the lineup, there's a huge, huge drop off. So again, I mean, we could say the same thing about the Mavericks with Luka Doncic. So lots of time to play out. And we'll see kind of how things shake out. Jackson, I want to jump into a couple more things. First off, looking at kind of the Sixers offense defense discrepancies, right? You look at this team defensively, third in defensive rating, sixth overall net rating, best team in terms of opponent's 3-point percentage. So you're like, okay, they're really figuring it out there on that front. Don't give up too much. to the opposition, second points allowed. And then you look at some of the offensive numbers, right? They're sitting at 20th in points per game. Not bad in three-point shooting in fifth, but not totally efficient. Second last in rebounding. When you look at the offensive end of the floor specifically, what is one adjustment you want to see the Sixers make now that they're fully healthy?
I haven't worried, honestly, about the offense much. Since Harden came back a month ago, they're sixth in offense, third in defense, fourth in net rating. This is all, you know, from cleaning glass. I think the defense is benefiting from some pretty nice three-point shooting luck. There's a lot of data out there that says it's pretty tough to actually, like, alter three-point shots on a wide scale. Obviously, you see guys like Draymond and Matisse Thybulle and D'Anthony Melton, sometimes McAfee as well. But generally speaking, it's pretty tough to, you know, affect the wide spectrum just kind of based on a lot of data out there. But I think that, like, I don't worry a ton about the offense. I think, like, you know, schematically, they're not doing a ton of super creative things, but they also don't have to, because a lot of it is we have a, you know, arguably the best scorer in the NBA. And Joel, you know, maybe you can make some qualms about kind of where he goes in the playoffs, but at least in the regular season, he's arguably the best guy, averaging, you know, 35 a game, basically. And you have, you know, arguably the best pick and roll passer, arguably the best pocket passer in James Harden. So we're going to run a lot of pick and rolls with Harden flowing to his left and making that pocket pass to Joel at the free throw line. And if they double, if they bring nail help, we'll swing it to a Tyrese Maxey, a D'Anthony Melton, a Tobias Harris, and George Niang. If they don't bring nail help, then we'll let Joel play single coverage, and we like our chances when Joel has single coverage in that spot. So the offense thing is in a pretty good spot. I do, like I said, I am kind of curious to see how much Maxey can invigorate the offense. I think this definitely has the potential to be a top three or four unit. I think the defense is, you know, if the shooting luck regresses, you know, more of a top four, or five, or six unit, but that's a really good recipe. If you have a top four or five offense with a top six or seven defense, you're in a very good spot heading in the playoffs. So I don't have a lot of qualms. Like I said, you know, I've criticized the lack of offensive creativity at times, but I do think it can be tough to be super creative because Harden, you know, as flexible as he's been in terms of some of his play style, he's still not a very good off-ball player, doesn't move a lot off the ball. It's tough to be super creative, but all in all, I think they're pretty solid. I'm curious to kind of see when these shrewd defenses maybe continue to take advantage of PJ Tucker's lack of, you know, offensive, you know, juice outside of the corners, and Matisse Thybulle's lack of offensive juice, kind of what they do to counter that. I think you saw at times maybe against, this is before, I think Harden and Maxey were back, but against the Cavs, you know, when they got blown out, I think the Cavs did a really good job of using their size to mitigate some things against PJ Tucker. We're not against PJ, but use PJ Tucker's lack of scoring to mitigate things as a whole. So just kind of more of a wait and see about what they do against some of these really good defenses. And they still have to play the Celtics three times, the Nets three times, the Bucks twice more. I think they have the Cavs twice more. So, you know, they have the Clippers again. They get the Grizzlies again. So some of these really good defenses around the league, they're going to get to see again. And so kind of curious what happens when they are facing them versus some of these easier matchups, you know, like, and I guess the Pelicans are a pretty good defense. I think they're top six or seven, but you know, they're still rumor seeing Herb Jones one of those games. So just kind of curious to kind of see what happens, you know, against those top flight defenses and if they continue to be a top 10 or top five or better offense.
Yeah, against better competition. And you know, I think looking at the January schedule for this month, 3 weeks from today, taking on the Nets at home again. Although that first game with Ben Simmons return was super fun because they won without their big three. So it'll be great to see that one too. And there'll still be a little bit of drama there. And Jackson, I was going to say, you mentioned James Harden not being effective at moving without the ball in the offensive end. Of course, he's playing 38 minutes a night. He's got to conserve some energy. What's he going to be able to do? Final one for you. I want to jump into some just general NBA talk. Like, we've seen these crazy stat lines over the last week, right? Donovan Mitchell, obviously 71, 11 and 8 for the Cavs. You had LeBron put up 43. Giannis had a 55 night. Klay had a 54 night. Joel Embiid, 42. Doncic had 39. Like, you look at this and it's crazy, right? Like, we're not, again, I grew up in the, you know, it was elementary school, entering high school in the 90s, where it was, you were seeing 90 to 84 games. And if a guy had 50, it was like a big deal. Although I remember once, I don't know if you'd remember this, Jackson, because you know, I don't know what the age difference is, but like Tony Delk once scored like 50 some odd points for the Suns, and it was like the hugest deal. You know what I mean? Because it's like only like two or three guys would do that in a season. When you're looking at this, and I saw somebody pose this question on Twitter, and I'm sorry, I forget who it was exactly, but it got me thinking too. And you're looking at the league as a whole. Obviously, we're seeing way more scoring, like over the last, let's just say, decade or so, where things have really changed into being high scoring, high powered, lots of spacing, lots of shooting. I'm not saying teams aren't playing defense. It's just, it's tougher to stop when you got positionless basketball, right? Like back in the day, you would have guys who are 7 foot tall, a power forward who's maybe 6'10", you know, and you'd have two guys on the block and everything was run through that. So it was a very slow game. But when you look at these stats, are they as meaningful as they were 10 years ago? Obviously, I'm not taking away from the fact, dude, scoring 55 points in an NBA game is very, very difficult. You deserve a ton of credit for being able to do that. But when you look at the numbers, the stats, the fact the game has changed so much, like, is a 50-point game still as impressive as it was, let's say, 10, 15 years ago?
Well, yeah, I think it really matters kind of the pace you're playing, right? Because, you know, back in the 70s, you know, we look like Will, obviously an incredible player. And part of the reason, you know, every time a guy has an absurd stat line that he's on there times 100 is because they played at ridiculous pace. Like he was averaging like a lot more, you know, possessions per game, which just means you're going to have more opportunities to produce stats. But, you know, you look at it versus the 2000s. I think a funny stat that I always like to look at that I don't know if this is necessarily correct, but there's like, you know, back when the 7 seconds or less Suns were kind of revolutionizing offense, like if you applied it to today, their pace, it would be like near the bottom of the league, which is hilarious because they were kind of like nobody played that quickly. Nobody got up and down that quickly. So that helps. But and then obviously like defense, you know, I don't know when some of these handshaking rules and when, you know, legal defense became a thing. But like it's harder to play defense because you aren't allowed to put your hands on a guy. You aren't allowed to just camp in the key and things like that. So.
Yeah, that kind of changed. That kind of changed, I think, in like the early 2000s, early to mid 2000s.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think because I remember, like, if you go back and like look at some MJ clips, there's a lot of times where guys are like camping out and stuff. And I could be misremembering some of the specific rules, but point being, there have been a lot of rules made by the NBA to help offenses. So I think, yeah, like if you were to say like Giannis scoring 55 today versus Giannis scoring 55, let's say like the Wizards and Bucks game was transferred in 2003. It would probably be more impressive that if Giannis scored 55 then, and obviously now they're saying this, but it's still impressive today. But yes, I think you do have, that's why you kind of, it's nice to look at per 100 possession stats to look at, you know, how fast are teams playing? What are some of the rules there? Like, that's why you look at league average offensive rating versus, you know, nowadays versus, you know, 10 years ago, 15 years ago. And generally it's kind of always been on the up and up the last 15, 10 years. So yeah, I think, you know, in a vacuum, yes, it would be more impressive to do it when teams played slower and when defense was not as difficult to do without breaking the rules. So yeah, but again, as we're now there saying, doesn't make Donovan Mitchell 71 less, doesn't make it unimpressed, doesn't make Giannis 55, like, take up with the ball in the hoops, I got to do it. Across a 48-minute game, obviously Mitchell had 53 minutes to do so, but still 71 is 71 points. So yeah, I think the offensive context is more favorable than it was 10, 15 years ago, but it doesn't mean that it you know, necessarily takes away from the accomplishments that we've been seeing this year and over the past 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 seasons.
Yeah, and that's the part that I've looked at too. Like, it's like, I don't want to diminish the fact that Donovan Mitchell scored 71 points in an NBA game. You know what I mean? Like, that's obviously crazy and ridiculous. So you don't want to diminish that. But I'm saying, I think now I'm looking at like 40 points. It's like, you know, it's 40 points, obviously a great stat line. But if you look at it, it's not the same as what it was to me 10, 15 years ago. And like I said, I grew up really in the late 90s. I started getting into basketball. I saw MJ's last three, you know, championship titles with the Bulls. And I remember those games. Especially after Jordan had left. I mean, that 2005 finals between the Spurs and the Pistons, like, games were like 77-70. And it's like, okay, I don't want to watch that. You know what I mean? Nobody wants to be seeing the leading scorer of the game at 14 points. But I mean, that's just, it's just such a difference to me. That was kind of like, yeah, I think scoring 40 now for like these superstar guys, it's just going to happen more frequently. And that's just the way the game is. Jackson, let's wrap things up here. Always want to thank you for joining me, and we're obviously going to do this again soon. Now we're back in the swing of things, especially with our podcast network and the Sixers starting to get their stuff together. So looking forward to keep on recording these at least once a week for the rest of the season.
Yeah, absolutely. And just as a fun little tool, for instance, like Clean the Glass is a great site to use. Like in 2008, 2009, the average offensive and defensive ratings were 108.7. This year, I think they're up to like 113, maybe 114. So that's over a decade and a half. You've seen the average you know, a 115 now. So almost 7 points per 100 possessions over almost a decade and a half. So just an example there of how much, you know, offensive, you know, efficiency has risen and how much defensive efficiency has depreciated. So yeah, always happy to hop on, and, you know, I'm sure we'll talk more, and you know, we'll have some fun games coming up, and you know, a lot, you know, that for us to learn as a Sixers team to get healthier and, you know, kind of solidify kind of who they are on both ends of the floor.
Yeah, and then we're definitely looking for them to definitely looking for them to go on a run here and start to, you know, they have done a good job of that. Obviously, like I said, winning 10 of 12, but keep ascending the Eastern Conference standings. All right, that'll do it for this one. That's Jackson Frank. Of course, like I said, he writes for us at Liberty Ballers, does a ton of other work as well. You can follow him on Twitter. I'll put that up into the link on the podcast. And of course, don't forget, subscribe to Liberty Ballers Podcast Network. Always appreciate a 5-star review if you're inclined to give us one. You could do your subscription to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your fix. We are there. And as I mentioned, Sean and Dave, if you're listening to this earlier on Wednesday, Sean and Dave will be back with Post Game on Wednesday, the Gastro Crew recording on Thursday. And then myself and Paul Hudrick will be recording on Friday after the Bulls take on the Sixers in Philly.